sent one over. And beginning of the visit with Phyllis this Saturday afternoon around 5 o'clock, the 8th of September, 73. Channel 1 over. And beginning of the visit with Phyllis is Friday, this Saturday afternoon, the 8th of September, 1973. Channel 1 over. And beginning of the visit with Phyllis this Saturday afternoon, 5 o'clock, this 8th of September, 73. Channel 1 over. Beginning of the visit with Phyllis is Saturday afternoon, the 8th of September, 73. On her visit to Foxfire.
You one leaflet. Trying to figure out how much they ask a year. 6 a year it is. See, they have another, besides that book, they have little bulletins. I mean, little, more than pamphlets, really, that come out.
Can you read?
But I don't see them listed here. I did see them up there, and I meant to buy them, then walked out and forgot them. But they're little pamphlets, and that gives you his phone number and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that the last one I was going to buy was handling the rattlesnakes. You know, the country,
yeah,
religion thing. That they'd gone back and photographed, and I was surprised because I thought they were reluctant to let people come back in and photograph and handle those snakes and all. But they had it all.
Oh.
A story and a lot of pictures about it.
Oh, yeah. And
but
this is a publication, $6 a year.
Yeah, and I think in that you get these little pamphlets that come out, must be 4 a year because, I saw the spring and the last fall, and they said the summer one was due any time, so they must be.
I haven't seen one of their publications.
Uh-huh.
Is this one?
No, it's just.
That gives you the list of everything, I think, that you subscribe and all that, and that gives his name on the back and his telephone. And his. They have a phone listed under Foxfire.
Yeah.
And, And he's at that school I wrote at the top, Raven Gap Nakuchi.
Oh, is
school,
he?
Where he teaches. You've been through there on 441.
Is that where you got it? You got a hold of it?
Yeah. I went out to the school. It's up on top of that hill, didn't you ever?
No, I don't.
No.
He wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
It's beautiful out there. And I was very surprised he was really young.
Yeah.
So, the lady, well, first of all, I didn't realize this, but all the people were tied in with this movie Deliverance. I kept seeing one after another that I recognized from the movie, and the lady at the hotel that took my money served the food in the dining room in the movie. And she's of the Dillard family. The Dillard House is up there. It's a famous eating place, and the York House, and she's affiliated with all those and has been all her life. And her name now is Cauldron, but she was a Dillard. And they grow all their own crops around there and take them into these big restaurants. And whatever tourists come through, they get them. I mean, they get their money. But they're very hospitable and so on. So I stayed there with them 3 days. And I told her the last day I'd like to meet Elliot. And she had been interviewed the day before herself for to be included in one of the Foxfire things, you know, because, oh, she's been there forever and takes a very active and part and is interested in the young kids in the community and everything. So she called him for me, and he said he had a class at 2, but if I'd come on out, you know, he could talk to me. So I got buzzed out there then just before I left that part of the country. What you looking at, guy?
Huh?
What are you looking at?
I just gonna write down what you put.
Well, I've given you that, so you'll have it.
Where's you at?
No, I'll give you that thing. You just keep that.
What are you gonna do
with that? I'll do fine. I didn't want anything except I thought maybe I would buy their spring and their winter publication, and it isn't listed on there anyway. And they're in pamphlet form, pretty big.
His name is Wigginton.
Wigginton.
Hmm. That's a old missionary.
Wigginton?
Establishment out there.
Mm-hmm. Sort of like that. Some guy went to Harvard and decided what he could do for his area was to come back there and establish a school that would include the entire family. And that's how it started. They started as arts and crafts, bringing in the people so that the families could support themselves. But the only thing I saw were young children. So I don't know if that tradition is carried through or not, but that was the reason it was started.
Well, it would alter a little bit from time to time, wouldn't
mm-hmm.
it?
So anyway, when I went in, here he sat in his unironed work shirt and blue denim pants, and he was unbelievably young, and I thought I might have a student, I wasn't sure. And he said just a minute he'd finish what he was working on, and then he gave me his attention. He had these big pretty blue eyes, and he says, I introduced myself, told him about Ward, you know, and then told him that we had the writers' conference and so on, and a lot of people down here had read and been interested in his book and what they were doing. He said that they'd had an awful lot of trouble getting it started, but that he'd weathered it, and it was now, you know, doing all right, and he had a lot of supporters, even among the previous people who hadn't, had given him a very, really hard time before. So then I told him about the yearly conference, and he had met Harry Cruz, and I said, I wish somebody like you could come down, because they like to get not just writers, they like to get publishers and editors and anybody that's affecting the writing world. So that didn't interest him too much. I could tell I wasn't in tune with him. So
yeah. He's traveled enough.
Yeah, he started in with his excuses. Well, he didn't want to spread himself too thin, and he's invited to an awful lot of things and so on. And I said, well, I wanted to tell you, too, while I was here, about the last one. I listed 4 names for him. I gave him Ward and Dick Green and Smith Kirkpatrick and your name at the bottom. And so I said, well, I wanted to tell you, too, about this last name on the list. And I said, Dr. Miles has collected all these tapes from around our area. He said, now, wait, what do you mean? Just the immediate area? Or where has he traveled? Where has he lived? I said, well, he's lived a lot of places. But I think the tapes are from the vicinity of University of Florida and south of there. Oh, all right, he said, because he doesn't believe in collecting. He doesn't think it's too authentic if you just collect here, there, and everywhere. He wants it to be from that immediate area. So he said, okay, go on. So I said, well, he hasn't had anybody really take any interest in what he's been doing. And he said, well, he could certainly understand that. I said, they're a very scholarly group. Well, yes, he could really understand that. And they don't give any credence to this thing of folklore, right? And I said, no, not really. He said, well, they wouldn't give me the time of day either. But he said that finally, it took him a long time, and he finally got some people who have given him good support now, and he said, and some who've turned full circle and really, you know, have changed their minds completely. But he said it was really rough in the beginning. I said, well, I thought that Guy's problem was financial support, really. And he's gone to the university, and he's tried, and he's tried, and he's tried every way he knows. And he said, forget the university. He said, you got to bypass the university. He said, they're too scholarly. They don't understand what you're trying to do. And I said, well, we don't. How would we do that? Well, he said, I'll tell you what. He said, I can give him some leads. And he said, could he correspond with me? Or something like that. He said, I believe I can give him some leads. And not only that, I can give him some names of people up here who already believe in this kind of thing. And they would be interested in talking to him as well. So I said, well, couldn't you come down when we have the writers' conference and maybe I could take you out to their place and that? And he said, well, unless they were willing to pay the way for two students, he does not go to too many events because he's asked to do so much. And he said, unless it benefits the students, I just won't do it anymore. He said, personally, the only thing I'd like to do, I would like to talk to that man down there. Because he said, I have a real feeling for what he's trying to accomplish, and I know how hard it is. And so I said, well, he said, does he have anybody who believes in what he's doing? And I said, not really. There's just a couple of students that they've taken in, and they've, you know, really taken in under their home and fed and everything. And but I said, not anybody can really give him much help. And so he said, well, he just kept pointing at that name on the table and said, well, this is the one who interests me. This is the only one who interests me on the list. See, he's not. He said, anyway, I couldn't benefit the rest of them. He said, I'm not a writer. I said, no, I know you're not a writer, but they like to approach it from a lot of different angles. They'd be interested in your ideas as an editor and a collector and getting people inspired. Well, he understood that, but that wasn't his main interest. He said he might be willing to come down if he was assured they'd pay his stay and bring two students who might like to do graduate work at a place like this. But he said they won't want to if there's no folklore there. And he had sent one of them. He said, I had the perfect student last year and who would have been interested in working for you. But he said, I finally got him located, and I don't remember where he would have to tell you, but he said I had finally found him a good place for that interest. And so then he said, what do the people in the area think of what he's doing? And I said, well, I think they're curious. They wonder what he's doing, why he's doing it. He said, this is the thing. You've got to give it back to the people. You tell him. He took it from him. It's his duty to give it back. And he said, once you give it back, they understand right away. And he said, they're very proud to be included in the locale of that, you know, that area. And I said, well, my husband and many others down there are really scholarly gents. And he said, well, he said, I can understand that. He said, but he said, the important thing is to save what the area has to offer. He said, a long time from now, they'll say, well, what was there? And he said, it's going to be the folklore people who can say this is what we had, but it's not going to be the research people. But he said, I know, and there's no talking to him. And he said, you have to go around them. So he was just the sweetest thing. So he had a class at 2 o'clock, and I said, well, I kept you a lot longer than I intended to. And he said, last thing he said was, well, maybe we could correspond. And I said, well, you've got the address now, and you can, you know, write to Dr. Miles. And I'll tell Smith Kirkpatrick what you've said. And I'll ask him if there's any way that they could get money together to get you down to one of the writers' things. So I haven't, you know, seen Smith or anything, but I thought you'd be interested. And he's a firm believer in what he's doing, but it took him evidently quite a while, although he's so young, you know. Couldn't believe how young
he
is.
Well, he started out, don't you remember? I remember reading this. He started out when he just got there.
Well, he can't be 30, I don't think.
Yeah. But you know, Phyllis, let me tell you, there's a great delay in people's allowing people to mature. That's what I found in that little thing that Suzanne did on the horse stable. Remember? They can do so many things. And you see, they talk to the people I know. That's the only ones they have to talk to them. Well, they get a whole different view of them than I do. And in some ways, it's more interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well?
And middle 20s is old.
Well, I told him, I said, this is Dr. Miles' brainchild. And I said, he wants to give birth to it, and he doesn't know really how. And he said, I understand that. He said, I don't know how many tapes he's got. His house is just running over with tapes. Well, he wanted to know where you went to get them. And I said, all around the countryside, all around that vicinity, everything that you could possibly take. And he said this, he wanted to make sure it was kept to one locale. That was very important in his mind. But he said the next thing is you got to get believers who will work for you, and then you got to get financed. And he said, I believe I can give him some leads on that. So I think if you would write him and just say, Phyllis Hellstrom came in, you know, and she reported that if I'd contact you, you might be able to give me some ideas on where to look for funding, or, you know, whatever you want to say it. But I believe that he could help. And then, unfortunately, there's no airport. I said, well, it's too bad he can't come up and, you know, everything. He said, there's no airport here. I have to fly out of Atlanta, drive to Atlanta, fly out of Atlanta for everything I do, almost. But he said, anymore, I don't go very many places, and mostly I drive to Greenville or some of the closer colleges. And he said, I'm refusing more and more and more things because my work's right here, and I'm not getting it done running off to college campuses. And so he said, I've made this my criteria, that if it doesn't help to place a student, I won't go.
Place a student?
Mm-hmm. For future graduate work. Now his...
That's something that...
Yeah.
That's what I feel the need of, is someone to pick it up, to use it,
mm-hmm.
to learn it. Just apprentice, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And it was interesting, I peeked into the student publications room, just one big room where they're done, you know, putting the stuff together. And he said, we're just boiling over here. And I could see they were. And then all the hallways lined with cartons of Doubleday books. And Maya's the biggest thing that's hit that area. But he really had to fight for it. And one woman said to me, and it was funny, she said, well, I've read it all, but she said, it's not very, and I said, scholarly, right? And she said, right, not very scholarly, is it? And she writes, she speaks in 7 languages, and she writes medical reports and transcribes them in a different language. So on.
That was there?
At the hotel where I stayed, where I met her, at Clayton, Georgia.
That's where he is.
And then I drove up the road, and I don't know if there's a city easy.
What
was
she doing there with 7 languages?
Well, she's retired there, and she writes these things up. She works from her home now, retired into. It's just God's country, I'll tell you. They took me up to their home and gave me a drink and.
Cider.
Yeah, a little more, and then the Raven Gap School then is on north. And I don't know if there's a town or what, but it's just called Raven Gap area, and there's a school there. I mean, a shop where you can go in and watch the weavers work and see all the things that they make at the school. And some of the children are boarded there, and then some are from different nations. So as you say, it does change from time to time, but originally it was started, they'd bring in the whole family during the week. They'd work at the school. school and then go back to their cabins.
Oh.
The whole family was brought in, and they taught them to weave and make pottery, and they got a farm going there for them. And it was to get these poverty level people making a living. But he's a dedicated young man, and very amiable, and except that he's serious in certain ways. You can see why he got things going, because he doesn't get sidetracked. He has his limits, and what he's willing to do, what he's not willing to do, and he proceeds with what he's after.
Well, you know, now he's been doing it several years, hasn't he?
I don't know how many. He has them building him a log cabin now. There's 100 acres, and he said 40 of it's his, and 60 of it belongs to the magazine, and his 40 he's leaving. I think this is right. I think he said leaving it to the magazine if anything happened to him. I think that's what he said, guys. Something like that. Any rate, all this 100 acres was bought, and the kids are building him a log cabin up in there. So the day before I tried to catch him, and they were out building.
He knows all those crafts, doesn't he?
Well, they're trying them. They're putting those kids, they're really making education come alive. They take them. Of course, they have the agricultural setup besides so that they get all that point of view. You know, have their own crops and their own chickens and their own, you know, all that, cows and so on right there on the campus. And then as far as the crafts, I don't know how much they're doing except the log cabin. I don't know whether they're really learning. I know they do learn weaving for sure at the school, and they do learn pottery for sure.
Well, you know, one of the nicest things in this is the making whiskey, moonlight, moonshine. They ought to. I don't know, and it's so easy, so it's such an easy touch, and no.
Well, I fluctuate so much when I listen to some of God's tapes, and then I see something on television. I think, you know, if we just had somebody to run with the ball, you know, with imagination and stuff, the possibilities are just so marvelous.
Mm-hmm. Well, I told him, I said, I'd be interested in working in that area in some way, maybe public relations or something. I don't know just what, but I'd like to go into folklore in some way or another. But I think the first thing, Guy, is to get him to lead you to people who know what, who believe in it, and who can possibly suggest funds for it, and then get a few people together who can really direct it and get it, get going, get facilities. Although they're working under very little room, just one huge room is all there. Since they're going out and bringing it back. By and large, I mean, I saw them all over town, and they interview, I mean, there's a few hundred people around there, and they must interview every one before they're finished.
Oh, yeah. Each, yeah.
Because they were into the, and not
well,
just.
Got, you see, he's got people for him to work with right there.
And it's not just the old-timey stuff. Now, they were in interviewing the lady who was in charge of this motel where I stayed, and she's about my age, I suppose, but she's quite interested in the young people, and she was in this movie Deliverance, and they wanted her comments about Burt Reynolds and his girlfriend Dinah Shore and what she's doing in the community to help the young people. She's interested in them a lot, and so it isn't, it's not just that. They also go out and interview for the modern times, too, really.
Well, this is all I know of it.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not going to mark.
This is all that'll come out in publication, or the old, because that's all I've seen so far. I don't think that I don't know how much more they will publish except for their pamphlets.
What they call magazines.
Yeah, they have like a little magazine that comes out maybe three or maybe four times a year. I'm not sure which. But
I don't know how they do it in such good taste.
Yeah. Well, if we could get him to come down, but I don't know.
I imagine he feels more at home up there. If he can talk better up there. For instance, you know, if I was to go off somewhere, I'd feel pretty much at a loss. But right here, if people come in here, I feel as if it's
Well, he said, what would I have to do if I came down to this thing? And I said, well, I think they're asked to address the freshmen. The people who are paid to attend are asked to make one address to the freshmen. And, you know, he said, yeah, well, you know, maybe you could do that. But he said, I don't really feel I have much to offer. And I said, well, people down there feel you have a lot to offer. So.
Well, what are the other writers?
Chiardi's coming again this year. I don't know who else. Guy now.
I mean, they are interested in this boy. Man.
I don't know. He said I met Harry Cruz, and that's all he said.
This is Phyllis's project.
Yeah. So I'd have to ask Smith whether he knows Elliot and whether he'd be interested in having him. I really was out of place to ask him to come down to the conference because I'm not in charge of who comes or who isn't. That's Smith Kirkpatrick's job. But I thought while I was there, I'd at least tell him about it. And then if Smith called him, he'll know what it's about. You know, you don't have to explain it all over the telephone. And I would think they'd find that it was a pleasure to get him. I mean, I couldn't imagine they wouldn't want him to come. So
he might come if he thought he could see God.
Yeah, that's about all he wants to do. He would like to come down here and do as little as possible and have me drive him out here so he can see what you're doing.
Yes, I would.
Yeah, see the tapes.
I'd like to see what they do. They record, too, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had some kind of gadget sitting up in front of him. And well, I'm going to drive back up there in October and see the leaves. It's funny, Ward thinks I have a boyfriend up there.
Well, good.
He's convinced I do, and he said to me last night, now, if you want a divorce, just say so. I said, if you want a divorce, go get one.
You can get it free now. They don't know you.
But he thinks, maybe I'll find one. Wouldn't that be ironic?
Yeah.
If
yeah.
he wished it on me.
I'm silly.
So, I did have fun, though. I met a lady from Mount Airy. And she and I laughed until we had a bellyache. Well, she's an interesting gal, and God knows she's old enough to be my mother, but we just laughed like a couple of schoolgirls and had the best time together. And she told me all about her love life. And she's thinking about marrying a man 24 years younger than she is. I said, marry him, honey. The boys do it all the time. You ought to do it, too. So she's worried. She says, but look how I'll look, and look how he'll look, and all this kind of stuff, you know. And then they gave us a drink, and we were already silly enough, and then neither one of us hardly ever has a drink. So we were just riotous before I'm sure they were glad when we went to bed.
She's the children, she's riding.
And all these old people in the hotel are people from St. Petersburg. Whole group of them, about 20 of them, come up there, and they leave there the 1st of October, and they go back somehow or another to St. Pete. Well, they just sit there, you know, like, they look like they're half dead, and the other foot's on a banana peeling, and they just sit there, and they totter off to bed about 20 and 9, and we laugh and kid each one as they go by about staying up and getting drunk with us and everything else, and they just shaking their heads and telling us how bad we are and so on.
Now, is that a hotel?
Yeah, but it's a family type, you know, where everybody goes up the same stairway.
Yeah.
So you get to know. And she got proposed to by Mr. Helms from St. Petersburg and while I was there. And I told her, definitely, she's not to marry Mr. Helms. You see, Mr. Helms goes up there, and he will quickly show you his little book. He has all these religious songs. Now, he says, can you play this boy, if he'd met Faye, he would have proposed to her that same afternoon. And I said, honey, I played the piano when I was in the 6th grade, but I haven't hardly played since then. Well, he wants somebody to play for him. That's all he's living for, is he finds a pianist, he sits him down, and they play these tunes. Okay, so he went to this one church across the street, and he said, well, they didn't appreciate my voice there. He said, they went all the way around me and invited everybody else to perform in that church but me. He said, I'm taking my abilities to the Methodists. And he said, I've already been to the Episcopal Church, and he had been to about 4 in town already. Well, now he was on to the Methodists. He said, I know they'll appreciate my singing. So they've got Mr. Helms to put up with until the 1st of October when he goes down to St. Petersburg again, takes his music with him.
He's a summer visitor.
He's there 6 months. So then we saw some of them are being just wheeled around, you know, by the other person. Some of them it's mother and daughter and taking care of this old woman because she's made of gold probably. But boy, we saw them all. I said, Ebby, there's you and me in 20. We better enjoy life today.
It makes you make the most of it.
Oh dear.
Well, you haven't been up there before.
Oh yeah, I went through Raven Gap once before. I knew I liked the area a lot.
Yeah.
And I got real disgusted.
But you didn't stop.
Not to really talk to anybody. I visited the crafts from the school, that place where they had those on exhibit, and that's why.
A Raven Gap.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't know there was such a place anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what we used to do. We didn't go to the Raven Gap, but everywhere we went, it was public place.
Mm-hmm.
The way everybody went up the same stairs, as you say.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't like for someone to talk to them.
Mm-mm. No, and everybody eats. See, one reason they come there, the older people, is because many of them are unmarried now or widowed or something, and they need a good meal. And they live for their good meals, and they're sitting out on the front. Everybody sits down on the front and watches. And,
well, there are not many places you can sit on the front.
Right, and they want it quiet after about 9 o'clock, and it's quiet, you know, there. So they have this immense porch out on the front.
Yeah.
Then inside they've got about 8 or 12 couches, and so everybody plops down there and reads the papers, and they talk about their stock markets, and one of them had slipped and fallen, and others were telling him he ought to wear more knee pads, that when you get to be your age, you pad your knees wherever you go and crawl instead of walking, and they they carry on about that. But and then they have a piano inside the dining room. Well, when they get anybody to play it, then they all sing these old-timey songs, and some of them are just nuts for religion. They figure, now's the time to save myself. You know, I'm getting close. I better just sing twice as hard and three times as long. So they sing all night that, and then they have an organ, and if they find somebody who can play that, why, they even have, sometimes they'll even dance.
Uh-huh.
And then they have a lot of them are not married, see, but one will be chasing another one. And we watched a lot of this, and they're jealous, you know. They get somebody in there that's 40. My God, you know, here I was 40. I was the youngest one in the whole place. I was envied by all those women. And they're helping each other get up and down the steps, and it's a whole different world. Yeah.
But it is.
Your considerations, your priorities are a whole lot different when you get older. They want the comforts, and they don't want too much expense. And this is $8 a night for single, and you get a real good rate for the month. And it's very leisurely. It's cool. It's over 2,000 feet up, so that they don't go down to Florida again until it cools off a bit. 1st of October, middle of October. And they can afford to live on their Social Security in this hotel. I called it the Last Chance Hotel. Ebby and I said, Ebby, look at it this way. This is your last chance, honey. You got to nab one here. Well, she'd had two already. And so she said, well, there is Mr. Helms. And I said, he's already halfway in the grave. He's going to drag you in there and kill your spirit. You got to stay away from Mr. Helms.
Where does that name Helms sound familiar?
Does sound familiar.
Yeah.
Well, anyhow.
Well, you don't want to meet Mr. Helms. He's the most serious man in the world about his destiny. So anyway, we did have fun. I'm going to write to her and have her come. She's going to come down in the winter, I think, visit me.
Well, now there ought to be some people back of Wigginton.
Yeah, he said
that you could talk to and find out.
He said on the board, he said, I have a lot of support from the board, but now it says here, advisory board and board of directors, so I wouldn't know which one he meant.
Yeah, yeah.
But
But what I mean is, if you were there, you would run across people like that.
Oh, yeah.
And they would be probably, they could be more interested than he is.
Well, he said, I could send some people. If I can't ever get down there, he said, I know I can send some people who are interested in this kind of thing. But I think first it would be nice to try to get him to get down if we could. If not through the writers' conference, maybe just as a guest speaker or something, some way to get him down.
What you're thinking about, so his way will be paid.
Mm-hmm. I know he won't do it unless he and these other two. I said, well, I didn't think it was too much of a problem to get a plane ticket from Atlanta to Gainesville's not that much for three students and put them up at the Union. I wouldn't think it'd be. And I said, wouldn't it be nice to come to Florida in the winter? That didn't appeal to him either, I don't think. He's got his, you know, he's got his sights set, and he's not wasting any of his energies or time.
This is what I, you know, when I look at somebody even like Rick, I think, my goodness, you know, there's nobody young that's venturesome. They got to have just, I just can't find, I haven't seen anybody who's venturesome.
You got to set up an appointment for them.
And you know, this is not the way you get.
Well, you see, Phyllis just crashed the party, didn't
she? Sure.
Well, what's wrong with that?
Well, I mean,
just
George
walk
has
in
got
and say,
venture.
Who I am, and I'm
sure.
Glad to see, I want to see you, man.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's wrong with that? Why do you have to?
Well, not what helped me was, see, he works closely with this lady who runs the hotel, and she helps his kids meet a lot of people in the area because she's lived there 1,000 years and everything. So she put in the telephone call, and then she said, you pick up line 5. Well, then, you know, she had said, Elliot, somebody here wants to talk to you. That really helps because he is a busy man. And he might have spoken to me, and he might not have invited me out if she hadn't.
You didn't have to
first.
Talk to him. You could have talked to her.
About him.
Well, about what goes on.
Well, not really, because, see, she's not really. Her work is social work in the town for parties for the young kids and to set up recreations for them, but her work isn't at the school, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She will introduce them, though, to these old families. That's where she comes in as a go-between. Because
mm-hmm.
she knows everybody.
Yes.
Everybody in that
town
and her surroundings.
Well, she knows more than he does.
Oh, she knows. I'm sure she does. Unless he's been raised there, she
well,
does.
Why you want to fool around with him?
Well, he's the one that can collect it and do the work and get it done and work these kids. Now, I don't know if she could.
Yeah, but she's the one that knows those people. And
well, she plays
just,
a vital part in the whole
thing.
You
could just go out there and pick up. Why you left off?
She is mighty important in that town. She's one. They have. I noticed they had written up a thing about what they wanted to do with their town of Clayton, and she's the head of all that.
Yeah.
And they had put out a brochure and it was lying there in the hotel. And they want to get an airport in there, and oh, I've forgotten what kind of recreations they want to get.
Is this Canton,
well,
Georgia?
Clayton,
Georgia.
Let me tell you, Phyllis. Now, you know,
what
got an
said?
Armadillo or something.
She might.
Or maybe she's talking to you.
Probably.
You know what I'd like to do, and you can't do that just all in one day.
Your feet.
It'd be a baby bird, huh?
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you. I just, you just find somebody who knows people and knows the country and just sit down and it'll go from there.
Well, if. Yeah, but he's got the young people interested, so that they're interested in going out and doing this. You've got to get enough people to do it for you.
Yeah.
And what I was going to say is I'd like to go to Smith Kirkpatrick, but I feel I have been pretty presumptuous, and I would like somehow to talk him into inviting this man down here, but not to make him realize how much I told him about the writers' conference, or he's going to think, well, you know, you've really... you know, gone too far, and I, it's really my job to set all this up. But he was just right there, and I know that I'm interested in that kind of thing, and I know there are a lot of people who are, and I just thought it was a good chance.
Sure. Do you think the writers' conference would be the best
I don't know.
Appearance for
him? I don't know what it would be. He doesn't think so. I could tell.
My impression of the writers is they're not especially interested in people. They're interested in ideas, you know, and technique.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was not, I didn't think he was impressed with that idea of coming down to that.
And they are also smart, you see, so brainy these days.
Yeah.
It's not right for writers to be so brainy. They ought to be just like Mark Twain, just common ordinary thought.
I don't know, Guy, but maybe we can think of something. Some way of. But I thought, well, if Debbie would want, or Rick would want to go up, I do think I'll go up in October. See, there is a campground.
Let me tell you, I'll bet you, now I can't speak for them,
mm-hmm.
but I'll bet you both of them are just, they're just ready to see a little bit
mm-hmm.
of things like that. And let me tell you, they've got my approach,
mm-hmm.
and you could watch them, see how they take hold.
Mm-hmm.
That would just be
wonderful. Well, if they could, you know.
They're both gifted, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're pretty far along, 25.
That's right. I want to go really see when the fall colors change. They were just starting,
yeah.
just barely beginning when I was there. And so I want to go back the end of October. And I thought I might even camp if I took the children. If I don't, it's real cheap to stay at this motel for a couple of nights. But if I take two or three of the children, then I think we'll go to this campground right beside the school there. Stay up there a few days.
Well, now that would be a place where the children would fit in
mm-hmm.
and feel at home.
Well, you see, my husband, you know, he had a paid vacation of a month last summer. He didn't take a day off. He had a paid vacation this month. He didn't take a day off. So I kept waiting and waiting and saying, look, we'll pack up everything. If you just go down to the Keys, anywhere you say, we'll have it all ready and all you'll have to do is get in the car. No, couldn't do it. So I waited till the very last, you know, Labor Day weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I said, now come on, you can even take this vacation and they won't even dock any days from your, you know, from your schedule. No, he wouldn't do it. So I took off in a huff, and I really didn't know where I was going to go, except I thought I want to go up in the mountains and see if I can find any property because it's too hot. But the reason I'd really like to get up there is that there's so much for those children to do in the summertime. They have riding and they have backpacking and they can climb mountains, and plus they have a lovely community there where they've got recreations for young people right there. Now, I went on up in Highlands, but I was told by three people that not to take them there because that's really a plush resort area and the drug problem's severe, and they said, we keep track of our kids. We're not saying we don't have any drug problem, but we know exactly what our kids are doing here. And the people in Highlands have failed their children. So, this looked like, with a few hundred people in the community, where the kids can get into town, can make their way around town, you don't have to take them anywhere, and basically everything's there you need, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Every kind of a shop that you need is there. And I thought, this is where I'd like to live with them in the summer. So I looked at properties, and I found two interesting pieces. One was almost 10 acre on the mountainside, which they want about 1,000 an acre for, which you'd have to clear and build yourself a cabin in, and it's surrounded by national forest so that you could walk for hundreds of miles and be on government property and so on. That'd be lovely. The other piece was 9 acres, and they want $14,000. It was near enough to town that they could bicycle into town from it, and it was flat. As you pulled up alongside it off a country road, it was first flat and then it went down. There, the man suggested you'd let the stream run in and dam it up and have a pond there, and then there was a small pasture big enough for maybe one or two horses, and then a grove of trees with a stream in the center of it. And that 9 acres looked real interesting in that you could use the stream. You'd have a beautiful view if you built there of the surrounding mountains, and yet you'd be real close to town, and yet you're off of the main drag, but not very far, maybe a mile. So those two properties looked awful interesting. And I don't know, you know, I think if I were alone, I'd go up there. I'd make my life there because I really did like it.
Oh, you wouldn't do that.
I think I would.
You just go up there.
Teach school. No, I'll tell you, I miss the small. I miss the warmth of living in a small town. And frankly, Guy, I'm never going to be... I don't need the anonymity of a big city because I'm never going to live in any kind of an outrageous or unconventional manner that demands the what the big city has to offer you or the way the big city you can hide in it. I don't need that. I like the openness of the countryside, and I miss the warmth of you know, shopping in that atmosphere.
But you don't like your country where you were brought up.
Well, it's pretty ugly there. I'd rather be in these mountains where it's pretty. It's awful ugly where I was brought up. It's just mostly cornfields and telephone poles.
Well, you know, that's what I thought about the Flatwoods out here when I came. And I turned down a remarkable piece of land out there. I just couldn't stand it. It's too flat.
Now, I like this because you have the Raven County goes from something like 2,000 elevation to 4,700. So you've got, you know, you can live up 3,000 if you want to build a cabin up in there.
And then you've got this sort of thing that has spread and is interesting.
You have a community feeling. It's a weird county in that it has the richest and it has the poorest. You've got your really wealthy, and then you've got your really poverty.
Boy, it does have wealthy people. That is, they have the summer guests.
Yeah, and then on the other hand, people like the Dillards, who own most of the land, are some of the wealthiest people in that part of the world. But they're working people. They don't. They're not the kind that sit down on a plantation with their money. They run the hotels. They're starting to build chalets in the mountains, and they've always got a new money-making project in the scheming, and they're working people. They don't need to be.
Mm-hmm.
And they take an active interest in the community.
You're right there. Really interesting, so often.
But they're death on condominiums.
They don't care for that.
Mm.
Well, that would be greatly in their favor.
Mm. They're deaf. They'll make their money somewhere, but they won't make them through condominiums. Mm-mm. They may be mountain people, but they've traveled enough to see what condominium means.
Well, you know, you've got so damn much money in the world. They can sit up there in Manhattan, you see, and without hardly pressing the button. Get a condominium put up down, you see it, in Fort Myers Beach.
Unless the people in the area are alert.
Well,
keep them out or regulate them.
It takes a lot to go along with that alertness, too, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. One thing that was interesting, I met the people who helped film Deliverance and helped do the... Did you see it?
No.
Well, they did the river scenes, which were the exciting scenes, and so we visited the Chattooga River where it was done. And this is a young man, I call him young, he's my age, he's got kids the same age as mine, and he gave up, he had a degree in philosophy and library science, set up a community system for the Southeast libraries, and after he set it up and knew it was going to go, he dropped the whole thing, went up into the mountains, and he's living next to the Nantahala, in the Nantahala Forest, next to the Appalachian Trail, so that as the backpackers come through, he sells them supplies and gives them a shower and a night's sleep. And he's got his kids all working, and they take these people, mostly from Atlanta area, down on river trips. And they have $500 invested in each raft. They last 2 years, and they take three at a time in a raft, plus the guide. And he hires these young kids from Georgia Tech, usually, to come over and work with him from spring until middle of October. And so he gave me his card, and then he has six horses, for people who want to just go through the mountains on horses. And he has one girl from Emory who he said he didn't know if she'd be back next summer, but she did it this summer. I said, oh boy, would Lori love that, to be in charge of the six horses and taking people on trail rides.
Oh yeah.
I said, I've got this girl for you.
That would be a nice thing for Lori to get away from here just a little bit, you see.
And she's got funk.
So if she goes along with me next time and we can go out and show her what they're doing, and it'll open her eyes to some possibilities working with a camp. They have several camps. They also have some schools up there where she could be sent for horsemanship and so on. At any rate, he was interesting. He's, I might not like it if Ward came home and said, look, we're selling the house and we're going to go live in the woods. I might really not like it, but still in all, I kind of thought, isn't that great that he's doing that? And all of his kids were coming into the hotel to see if their visitors had arrived yet. And this hotel where I stayed is the central place of town for everything.
Yeah.
It's where they come to pick up the people from out of town who go on the river trip, who go out to his place because there's enough couches and there's enough of a lobby and they can play chess until the people get there or read papers or play the piano or something. So it's the center of the activity. And everybody who comes through there goes through that hotel, the Last Chance Hotel. So, so Burt Reynolds, he was there with Dinah, and I saw the young boy who played the part of the retarded boy in the film, and I asked him what they thought of James Dickey, and they said, well, when they saw him, he was bombed out of his mind. And he was an obstruction as far as making the movie was concerned.
Did you see any of his performances here?
Not really. But when he was to my house, he said, who are you anyway? I said, I'm nobody. Who are you? And when he went to Hansen's house, he said to her, who are you anyway? And she told that to 100 people. She thought that was the rudest thing. She had an enormous party. He didn't know who she was. Dear. But you know, they invited him down to camp, and he just crawled in his sleeping bag on the stage and went to sleep.
Where?
Down at Tampa, I think.
Yeah.
They said they were highly disappointed. Highly disappointed.
Did he ever get to a client here?
I don't know if he did. But he made Yvonne Dale feel like she was 15 years old, she said. She said, he took a good 20 years off my life. He said, come on, honey, slip upstairs with me at the hotel, it'll only take 5 minutes. She said, I take 15 at least. She was a match for him every inch of the way. She was. Of course, he had been drinking heavily, so you can expect his wits were dulled, but she was a match for him. She felt real good about that.
I never tell you, is he really gifted?
Well, it was a pretty good adventure story, though. I thought it was like something you'd read in a true story.
Yeah.
Is Harry Cruz gifted? He's a sensationalist. You call that gifted?
I don't know. I'm going to tell you, I don't, let me tell you, I keep telling Ward, my contact, you see, with the writers is a generation ago, and that's all the contact I want. I mean,
enough is enough.
I had enough to do me. Now, if I knew one of them, you know, and I could just talk with them without them being a writer and me not being a writer, they'd be perfectly all right. I'd appreciate it. But, you see, but I don't have that opportunity. I mean, I can't go in and do it.
Well, I walked up the stairs yesterday with Harry Cruz, and I asked him several questions. And I'm sure if anybody asked him, did you walk up the stairs with Phyllis Hellstrom yesterday? He'd say no. He didn't even know I was there. I mean, I don't go around making impressions on people, I don't think. Not on writers, anyway. Oh, boy.
I've come to wonder just what a writer is. I've known for a long, long time that I wasn't a writer and there would be. I can use the language and I can type and say things, but I'm still not a writer. And what a writer is, I'll be damned, it's elusive to me. I just don't. Maybe it's the people who make up things. You see, I think
some of them are really artists, but I think many of them are just out to make a quick dollar from the public. Like, that's what I think of Mickey Spillane, for instance, and Harry Cruz. I classify them together, definitely.
I don't. Did you run into this Jane Stewart? The only reason I knew she was here was they had a little special article on her in the paper. And I know her daddy, of course, Jesse. I knew him pretty well.
I've heard of her.
And I was over there and mentioned her to Ward. Brought up. Oh yes, he says she's the cause of all my troubles today. She'd been applying for jobs. They didn't have a place for her, see, so she complained to the president that they were anti-feminist. And so I tried to get in touch with her, partly because of Jesse, and partly I just wanted to read something she wrote and see if she wrote the way I thought he did. And it took a long time. I never did see her. But we finally got one of her books.
Mm-hmm.
And they all read it. And I finally saw it lying around one day and I picked it up and started in on it. And I tell you the truth. I just read a little at a time. It's a series of sketches, and she calls it a novel. But it's about people she grew up with or knew from the community. And she kind of tells certain episodes about them. But she does it without any art. She does it, it's loose. And I like that part of it very much. But I thought it was a little too loose, but you know, I just my feeling. And I learned a good bit from it, I thought. And what she says about the people doesn't interest me. I just don't want, if that's what the people are like, I don't want to know them. You know, you have the thing. Now, last night, Faye reported on some of the things she picked up over there. And I said the same thing. Well, I didn't say it, to be objectionable. I just said it. I thought, well, we were sitting around the table. I thought maybe they'd pick it up and see what it was that actually going on, you see. But that's what you do. Just try to open it up. She had a right, just very short. She'd been to the beauty parlor. And Marilyn over there, she's one of the Townsends that Ms. Rawlins wrote about, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all gracious. And she has that gracious side of the Townsend. Mama was a wildcat, and she didn't take after her. She took after her daddy. Now, Faye, I've given you the little springboard,
yeah.
And you won't pick it up.
Well, she was just cutting my hair, and she just was talking, and she said, I asked her about, I just made comment, and I said, how's Philip like his new job? That's her husband. Oh, well, he likes it. He's working it. As a car salesman. But I don't like it because he doesn't. I never see him anymore. He's always, he never gets home. But said, even so, he's not as bad as Sue's husband, which is the girl who was out here. Said all.
You don't have to put in a witch's face.
Sue Wood, all her husband does is work and sleep and go to bed.
At 8 o'clock.
He won't do anything else. And she said, Sue's, there's no social life. Sue's about 25, my age, she said.
And that is something to say that I didn't know about Sue.
And she said, you know, Sue, this is a beautiful seamstress. Said she,
I didn't know she was a seamstress.
Just a beautiful, and said she can upholster. Just do that. Said she upholstered that couch in there of mine. And we sort of fixed it up one night. Said, when you bring the couch back down here, Freddie brings it back down here, well, maybe he'll stay and talk a little while. And she said, they came in, and Freddie brought the couch, and I said, won't you sit down? And he sat down, and I said, you know, I just have made a pie. And I cut him a piece of pie and gave him a cup of coffee and stayed a little while. And said, Sue said, you fussed all the way home? He said, you tricked me into that. They didn't speak to me for a week. Marilyn said, oh, you really have to have a lot of understanding.
Well, now you see, she picked up a little bit more on that. But I said, well, now that's, I don't want to know that about people. Well, I don't mean you can't listen to what people tell you, but you see, what it is, you want to get into it. Well, for one thing, Marilyn lives in that, but she survives it and can see it and report on it. Now, that's one thing you can say about it, you see, that you get into.
And it's not gossip. And all the time she was cutting and washing my hair,
no.
She was just telling me things about people in the community.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't gossip.
No.
It's just that I didn't know, just right here in this little community. And it wasn't just beauty parlor talk. Yeah, she was really just in that world.
Well,
and I was, yeah.
You see how you.
And what we were wanted to look at was examining, well, why isn't it interesting? You know, I mean, what do you see of these people, and you know, and why? But she herself lives in it.
Well, you see, it'll go a long ways. But it's not very interesting at that point. Now, she said about Philip parents over there, Jim Livengood. He works at the university. I see him up there all the time. And her mother-in-law, she's a super salesman. For appliances and all like that. And all he does when he comes home, he mows the lawn, and goes to church, and goes to bed.
When 8 o'clock comes, he goes to bed, she said. She said, now I'm not against church. You can go to church all you want to, and I think yards have to be mowed. And you do have to go to bed, but she said, it doesn't make any difference. Who's there? Could be his friends, and he'll get up and as if he's going to wash his hands and go to the bathroom, and pretty soon somebody will say, where's Jim? Mom will say, he's gone to bed.
That's right. you keep looking at it, you see. Now, I've known him a long time, a good while, and on the campus, he circulates all the time. Everywhere he goes, he's in demand. He's sort of big and overgrown now and a little heavy with his he's not as supple as he was 10 years ago. He's lived a full life up there. It's almost like Miss Daisy. The old field hands, as Miss Daisy knew them, they'd go to field, and they'd just talk a blue streak all day, and they'd sing and have a good time. And when they went home, They didn't need any more entertainment. They didn't need to go anywhere. Well, what you've got there is one generation reporting on another, and that's always a little tricky. And I just, it could be a little bit like that. He's had a full day, not just of work, but of pleasure. Maybe more than she realizes.
Mm-hmm.
Now she sees people all day too. She doesn't work solid. She just works a day or two a week.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
So what you try to do is just make see look at it, and that position of doubt is actually what we used to call it. That's the sort of thing I don't care about hearing about. Well, that's not supposed to silence you. That's supposed to open it up.
Not supposed to mean that. Well, now I don't want to hear anymore. We better hush. But to go ahead and see why it is he doesn't want to hear. Well, you
but
see, Marilyn's opening statement was, "I hope," and she had an opening statement when I said, "She said, but Philip, I never see Philip. He has a good time. He enjoys what he's doing, but I never see him." And this was her statement about the husband. Go ahead and Freddie works out in the field, and he loves working in the field. But what does Sue do? At night he comes in, he goes to bed. He's tired. You know it. And so that was.
So
it was the it's the men who don't see, and it's the women who have to look. In her, what she was saying.
Let me tell you, Phyllis, I've got some hay now. You can fill up your car.
Well,
gosh, I wish you had.
I went out and got, you know, your little man who sold the country store over at McKinopy. 83-year-old Mr. I want to say Thrasher, and that's not right. Is it? What's the man's name?
Weaver?
Weaver.
No. Oh, I know. The red and white, I guess.
He's a small man, and he's run the store over there all this time, and they sold out a week ago, too.
Oh, I don't know.
Maybe it is Weaver. Well, it was raining. Ward was angry at everybody because he said we're letting her out, and it was raining and so on. So I felt so sorry for her just having to stand there. So I went out to McKinopy and just started asking him. And he said he had just a few bales for his cattle, and he'd sell me two. So I carried home two. I haven't looked to see how much is left of the two. But this is our problem. When it really rains hard, she's just really in a pickle because she's in that corral and nothing to do.
Yeah.
And she's already so lonely she's about to die. And then you take away nothing to feed. There's a place near Rocky Point Road where we could put her, and Ward thinks he wants her at home, see, for him.
Yeah.
But she ought to be put out there because she's lonely.
He said that little colt might come in and stay with her.
Yeah, Lori's thinking of bringing the colt in, but I foresee a lot of problems with that, like how are you going to get the colt there? How are you going to load it, get it there? Or how are you even going to walk it there, or what?
Yeah. I'd be B. Fisher.
Well, let's see. Lori works for us sometimes. No, I'm going to go in just a second. Lori's been helping her sometimes, and her thumb is still in bad shape from that cow, you know.
Oh.
Cow kicked the door, and the door, she caught her thumb between the door and the gate post. And they're trying to rebuild that, and they may have to take a section out of her hip to do it. So that's pretty bad. And she's had, the romance with Mr. Perry, the big cattleman, fell through. And then she had another romance after that. And he's married, and he wasn't pretty. So she thinks she thinks she's going to keep on with her cattle business, and she's still supporting her husband.
The cattle business records are going down.
Well, she had a lot of thievery, and
then
she put down those new tubs, and they came through, and they picked them up with bulldozers and pitched them over and busted them all up. We had just put those down, and she planted, she wanted to get in 200 acres of something or other. You know, but anyway, something for the cattle to eat. So she's paying Lori 50 cents an acre to go out and work. And Lori's helped her several days on that. And,
oh, really?
So,
that's nice.
Mm-hmm. And, then, Lori said, don't tell her, but her boyfriend asked me to go out with him. While she was out working that day. Paul asked her. He said, now, don't say anything about this to Dee on your way home. But he's a goer. So, she doesn't know what she's going to do, really. But, I don't know.
You know,
that
looks like a cloud, to be honest.
Is it some rain? No. Oh, well, I gotta get back. It's not too good.
So I went over around 1500, and the end of the visit was Phyllis this Saturday afternoon, the 8th of September 73. Channel 1 over. Around 1500, and the end of the visit with Phyllis this Saturday afternoon, around 5 o'clock, the 8th of September 73. Channel 1 over, around 1500, and the end of the visit with Phyllis this Saturday afternoon, the 8th of September 73.